being a public school educator, a big piece of working with our children in our communities, my biggest beef is the testing. The testing keeps a lot of our kids back on purpose. Let's be clear about that. It is on purpose. When it comes to state testing, I am clearly told I cannot modify anything. I cannot talk to my students. I have students who cannot read, who are clearly dyslexic. I'm not an expert on it, but I know what it looks like. Mm-hmm. I remember the first year I was teaching in Patterson, I had a student who clearly could not read. He was in fourth grade. I loved him. Could not read. He was being pushed through, easily pushed through.
Yeah.
Got diagnosed late. I think he was just diagnosed the year before I got him. So that means in third grade, you're being diagnosed as having a disability, which is insane to me. And when I begged, I wrote on my board of education, I was still told no.
It's a whole heartbreak.
Hello, and welcome to the Black and Dyslexic Podcast with Winifred A. Winston and LaDerrick Horn, the show that unapologetically focuses on helping Black and underrepresented minorities navigate the special education process. We want to help raise awareness in the Black and Brown community, remove the stigma about learning disabilities, and provide you access to professionals in the space of dyslexia and special education that you need to hear from. Welcome back to the Black and Dyslexic Podcast. I'm Winifred A. Winston.
And I'm LaDerrick Horn. And welcome to part two of our two-part conversation, a live panel conversation that we recorded at the NJEA's Transform Conference in Somerset, New Jersey, which is my hometown. If you listen to the first part of this conversation, you know that we were able to put together an amazing panel. And so you're going to hear a little bit more from that panel. And then we actually transition into taking questions from our audience. We had a lot of fun. You're going to hear a lot of giggles. And
yeah, I was saying, like, I always feel like I'm saying the same thing, but, you know, we keep hearing the same challenges time and time again, right? So not only from the folks that we interview, but here it was a live audience. We didn't get to pick them. They showed up for this particular session and we're hearing the same things again. So it's just validation and it confirms that, like, you need the Black and Dyslexic Podcast.
That's it. So here you go, part two of our conversation.
I was recently at an event in New York and a little white boy, he was 15. He said he was identified at 6 and him and his father did OG together because then the dad got identified.
Orton Gillingham together.
I'm sorry. Yeah. Orton Gillingham together. So then the next, he was a race car driver. He's an athlete. And then the next gentleman was 25. NFL player, Black, he got identified in middle school. Mm-hmm. And that's all he said. He said that teachers would skip over him.
Yes.
Right? Yes. And doing work. So me, I'm looking around saying, does anybody else hear what just happened? This white boy and this Black young man is sitting there side by side. Mm-hmm. And the white kid just said at 6, he was identified. Then him and his dad did it together. Yep. And the Black kid is saying he got identified in middle school. Now, I'm just going to assume, because what Frank told me, how his transition from 8th to 9th grade, that he grew really big. I'm going to assume because this young man is in the NFL now, in middle school, he was a big Black dude. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm just going to make that assumption.
It's a fair assumption. There aren't a lot of small guys.
I'm sitting here looking like, did he get remediation?
Right.
Probably not.
Right.
Probably not. So in the school systems, we got to do a better job of, like you said, the teachers getting to know, but also parents kind of really understanding their child. Because what I see at home is not what I see in school.
Correct.
Right? Her executive functioning is on point in school. They say she's the most organized child ever. Mm. Don't come to our house and look in her room and say that.
Definitely with somebody with ADHD, I feel like having our room being a mess, to us, I mean, to outside people, it might look just a mess, but to us, we know where exactly every single last thing is. If you move something, then it will mess up our whole, like, way of life in our room.
So we prepared 10 questions. We ain't getting all 10 of these questions. I'd like to jump to question 4. Can I ask that one first? Yep. So, because I think this is an important part of the mission of the podcast is also talking about mental health. All right. So how can we improve access to mental health resources and supports for Black students who are neurodivergent? So anybody want to take a stab?
I feel like we definitely should advertise it a lot more, because like Black people don't really get, like, let's say we go to the doctors or we go to a therapist or a psychiatrist. Black people don't get diagnosed like with either the right diagnosis or they get misdiagnosed. So like we're scared to go to these places because of that. And we like just don't want to get misdiagnosed. And even with the parents also have to learn about our disabilities in order to like grow with us. So like going to these things and advertising them and saying that it's a safe place would very much help both the parents and the child.
Desiree, can I just a follow up? So advertising, right? So like advertising or marketing mental health, particularly within minority communities, the Black communities, like for your generation, like what would that have to look like to be appealing?
Personally, I feel like for my generation, like we're all on technology now and like phones are a very big thing. I guess like still try to advertise it in school as much as possible. And like, how do I put this? On like our Schoology app page where we get everything from what the school has to say. I feel like they should put some things up there that to say that, hey, we're here. You can use us
if you need help.
If you need help, yeah.
Yeah. One of the things that, you know, and hopefully the podcast is a part of that advertising. One of the things, I just got on TikTok recently. So I got a TikTok. Yeah. Oh boy. TikTok.
Right.
Yeah. But one of the things that's great to see is all the conversations that young people are having around their mental health, particularly the autism community.
Yeah.
Right. There's a lot of normalizing of behavior. Yes. There's a lot of folks who talk a lot about ADHD and the experience. And sometimes it's, I mean, some of the best advertising or marketing is funny, right? Sometimes it's funny stuff. And I do think, you know, there's a fair amount of stuff that, you know, as a somewhat of an expert in this field, I was like, well, this is not actually the best information. But I do think that there's a normalizing of some of the mental health that and the needs, and they're hopefully a decreasing in some of the shame of seeking it out. But like you're saying, but still, like, where do you find it, right? Like, how do you find it? And putting it on the website for the school and in places where people can get to it more readily, I think is really important.
Like, online and, like, TikTok, you just got me thinking. Like, TikTok is a big platform that's for discussion and that has been being used for discussion, like, important topics. Like, what's going on in the world? So for this, like, I feel like they do talk about mental health and Black mental health and stuff on TikTok to just get it out there. And so people really like understand and know what is going on and the like reasons why we like need to advertise this stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anybody else to the mental health
point? I think that you should have like a back to school night and have parents come out and have the services available in the same location, like in that same room, and that way you can have speakers who talk. We also have the material available to those parents who don't have the technology.
Definitely.
I mean, that way you're hitting the parent side, because like you talked about, the students are having the conversations themselves, but I feel like some people have that stigma that you don't go talk out your problems to other people in a profession.
Don't tell our family business.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I think also some of it has to do with the availability of clinicians.
That's right.
You know, I think oftentimes one of the things that drives behavior is the opportunity to look across the desk or any other place and see a reflection of yourself.
That's right.
It's way more powerful than I think folks on one side of the desk can communicate clearly. You can see it in any number of fields. When you walk into a place and there's somebody who may not be you, but has some of the same experiences more broadly, it disarms some of that stigma, because you're not talking to other. However you define somebody as other, you're talking to, broadly speaking, talking to somebody in the family.
Yeah.
So it's different. And I think as we continue to add clinicians, both clinicians of color, and I think folks who experience disability, that opens up a completely different conversation, because it's one thing to say, I've been trained in this experience to be able to support you. It is a completely different thing to say, this is my lived experience.
Yeah.
Let me tell you. Right. It happens with parents. It happens with students. It happens with educators.
Yeah.
Yeah. Some of the funding for the podcast came because I wrote the grant up stating that undiagnosed learning disabilities trigger mental health issues. Mm. And so sometimes educators need to really understand and be able to identify. I know when I was a teacher, I had a student who just seemed anxious all the time. Right. And a lot of that mental health is coming because that learning disability wasn't identified. Mm-hmm. Even for myself, I was identified incorrectly with dysthymia, which is a mild long-term depression. And I remember the way the therapist described it, because I kept saying, I'm forgetful, I'm forgetting things. And he asked me, have you ever been still? And I didn't understand that question. Like, what do you mean? He was like, have you ever been still? And I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about. Like, I really didn't get it. But then when I realized I was ADHD, I'm classic combination ADHD. There is no way on God's green earth I should have been working a full-time job, running a business, adjunct teaching two sections, and then driving an hour and a half to Virginia to adjunct career coach adults in education programs. That is a classic person with ADHD, because I see this, I see this, I can do this. Yes, 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 right. Yes. And I was doing things to exacerbate my ADHD and I'd crash. And then guess what? I do it all over again.
Yeah.
And that just became my normal.
Right.
That became my normal. And it is exhausting. It is exhausting because I'm going down, I'm going up, I'm going, and I don't know that I'm doing things that I should not be doing. Say no. Exercise every day.
Eat.
Right?
Eat. Drink water.
Coffee helps, right? The stimulant, it does help, right? Stay away from sugar, right? Like, I did not know, and I was incorrectly diagnosed. And I look at my daughter, she has anxiety. She has really bad anxiety. So we talk through it, and she's very hard on herself. But some of the mental health will rear its ugly head first because there's this underlying diagnosis. Like what Derek said, he was depressed. Right. And then I worked in HR, did a lot of work in HR, and I saw a lot of adults who were underemployed because they were afraid to take a class or take a certification to go to the next level.
Yeah.
I work with educators. She says, Winifred, I'm ADHD and I have lead. I can't pass this portion of the praxis. I want to get this endorsement. Right. And so guess what? She was depressed. She felt stuck. Right. So the mental health, oftentimes it will show up first. So as educators, as parents, even, we got to be able to recognize if our child changed, like what's going on, what's going on. But when we don't talk about learning disabilities, when there's a stigma around learning disabilities, I had someone tell me, oh, your daughter's dyslexic. I'm so sorry. I was like, oh, no, she's great.
Right.
You know, so the mental health resources and support is necessary and needed, and we have to kind of like keep our head on a swivel.
Yeah.
Right? For the neurotypical folks, you know, get a little ADHD. Have your head on a swivel, like, oh, it could be this, it could be this. And just talk about these things to normalize it.
So with mental health and having dyslexia and depression, I am suffering with anxiety and depression as well. I also have insomnia, which makes it very difficult to go to school. So like, let's say I wake up late and I have time to go to school without being late. It makes it very hard for me to get up out of bed and like be like, all right, let's go. We have school, you have time. Like, let's just go. That causes my attendance to drop horrendously. This is the first year that it has been okay, but I'm still struggling. But with the insomnia and anxiety getting up, it's just in my head. It's just like, I can go. I have to go, but I can't. And it just makes me doubt myself that I can't do it. But when I get up and go and I get to school, I'm like, oh, I could do this. So dyslexia and the mental health of it definitely affects children going to school. I'm being treated though. So that the treatment with the anxiety helps a lot tremendously with pushing me to go to school.
you know, I had a, if I could just chime in, I had an experience the top of this week. I was doing a school assembly for, I think it was third, fourth, and fifth graders at a school in North Jersey. My good friend Hal was a principal there, and he invited me to come and talk to the students. And so I was doing poetry with them, and but I also shared my experiences of being LD. And so afterwards, Hal was like, yo, there's this kid I want you to meet. You talked about being in a resource room, and this kid, like, I can tell he wants to help, but he feels really down about going into this resource room. So we go into the room, and this young man opens it up, and there are like three or four kids in there. And it was like, the teacher's like, they were just talking about your presentation and how it feels to be in this room. And like one kid was like, you know, what did you get from, you know, Lederick's presentation? He said, I realized that I'm not that dumb. And Hal said, no, no, no. It's not that you're not that dumb. You're very smart, right? And then Hal says, I was in a resource room, right? And he talks about, like, I remember what that experience was like, right? And I'm sitting there, you know, like, and I know Hal's story, and it's part of the reason why we connect, because we got the same similar neural makeup, and we're passionate about education and helping young people. But I'm sitting back there having this experience of like, yo, what is it like to have a principal who's out? Right? A principal. And this is, he's a handsome guy. He's got the suit and the tie on. And then, and you know, and then not even to mention, like, this poet shows up and does his thing. Right? And now we all hanging out in the research room. Like, my mind would be blown if I was these little kids. Right? And so I'm saying this to say that I think that there's also something about us that as educators, as support staff, particularly within this mental health space, also being open about the challenges that we've had with mental health, talking bravely and openly about seeking out support, right? What that relationship with your therapist or with medication or changing, you know, different aspects of your life, you know, changing your peer group, whatever that was you had to do to get to the next level, or even if you're in process, being open about that. The educators that I remember the most throughout my education, you know, the support staff that I remember the most were the people who were the most human, right? Who were the most open to me about not only what they were great at, but also what their challenges were. And I think that's part of that relationship building that we were talking about earlier. I think it helps to open that door to wanting to get help if you can see people who you respect who've also received that help in the past.
I'll chime in here too, because my daughter started off at a private school, then a public charter school. And I remember the principal saying, oh, she'll really connect with the second grade teacher. And I'm like, oh, okay. And then we left and went to private school. She goes to a private dyslexia school. So her teachers are out. She'll say, oh yeah, well, so-and-so, she's dyslexic, mommy, dyslexic, just like me. And she gets it, she understands it. And she has a tutor, and her tutor is also dyslexic, ADHD, slow processing speed, low working memory. Profile very similar to my daughter's. And what I later learned is that that public educator, when the principal said, oh, they'll probably get along, she's neurodivergent. But in public school, they didn't reveal that. That would have made all the difference to my daughter to say, oh my gosh, she's dyslexic too, or she's ADHD. And so I see it that it really makes a difference, because she wants to be a lot of different things, but she's like, oh, my teacher who teaches math, or my teacher who's the art teacher is dyslexic. And she's just thrives in that environment. And her tutor is also able to help her, because when we got we just did reevaluation. And so the working memory and the processing speed hit me heavy, because now I fully understand what that means. And as a mom, I'm like, oh, I gotta be more patient with her when I'm in the morning, when we're trying to get out of the house, it just doesn't work. Sometimes I'm like, we do this every day. Like, do you have your water bottle, you know? And so it hit me heavy, but her tutor says, Logan, that's me. That's my profile. And she's like, really? She was like, yeah. Like, so what? That just means that folks need to pause and slow down and give you chance to get it. And she's like, oh, okay. And now she's perking up, and she's not as like down about it, right. You know? So it really makes a difference when the adults in her life can show up and thrive. Her dad is dyslexic. I'm ADHD. And I didn't always, we didn't know, right? So I tell her all the time, how lucky are you? Right. Like, you know, we didn't know, you know? And in our house, it's like a running joke. How do you spell? I can't spell. So I can't be lively. But the running joke is, how do you spell that? Yeah, right. Yeah. Like, go figure. Or we're reading assignments and I'm reading and I'm like, oh, well, I don't really know what that word is. And like, it's just the norm. You know, we are all on our phone. Da, 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 da. Oh, yeah, that's how you spell it. So it really, really makes a difference when the adults in your life can say, oh, I struggle with that too. And my daughter told one of her teachers he was having a bad day because he didn't feel like he was pushing them further enough. He didn't feel like he was doing his best. And my daughter, she's 13 now, she's 12. She went up to him after class, right? And she says, I think it was Nate. I'm going to just say it was Nate. It might not have been Nate, but she says, Nate, I understand how you feel. She says, you feel like you're not good enough and you're not doing your best, but I want to tell you that you are, and you're one of my favorite teachers, and it's okay to have a bad day. I feel that way too. And I'm like, now you guys are like, oh, like I hear this every year about my child, right? So me and her dad was like, oh, he got a story, you know, because she done waited after class to tell him something. But he said that that's something I will remember for the rest of my life. Mm-hmm. That will be embedded in my teaching career forever, because she came up to me and consoled me, and I had to kind of get myself together. Like, this is one of my students.
Right.
So you just imagine that in the reverse, right? I shared a negative story before you guys came. I remember that, and I'm 48. I still remember that, right? So for a student to be able to connect to an adult, it means a lot.
It does.
And it makes it okay.
I wanted us to do one more question. Maybe we'll do the last one, and then we'll turn it over to the audience. Also, I'm really glad that the guy with the big camera showed up, because we like, we got to be the best looking session in the conference, right? Come on, right?
It's easy.
Easy, right?
It's easy. Please, come on, stop it.
Let's be clear.
Can we do the pose? Can we strike a pose? Go ahead.
Yeah, let's be clear.
Okay, in the newsletter, please. Okay, what was I going to say? Okay, I think that, and I've heard this consistently throughout my life, I think one of the great powers that comes from being a person with a disability is that if you are able to be successful, if you get to that point where you, and I'm saying this because I hear it in the story you just told about your daughter, there's a degree of empathy that I think many of us develop because... Yeah. To be successful, to survive, we have to look inward.
Yeah.
We have to evaluate who we are. We have to ask questions about, are you smart? Do you have value? And I think doing that, right, and really, and I think it's also probably part of the power that comes from the intersectionality of being a Black person and having a disability. I very much think it sets you up, doesn't promise it, but it sets you up to be an ally to other marginalized people. Right. I think, you know, one of my great benefits was that I grew up in a household where my grandfather was the president of the New Brunswick chapter of the NAACP. Activism, having those kind of conversations. My parents were very much products of the Black arts movement. You know, we talked about Malcolm X and had those sort of conversations in our household. But when I see other people, will it be the LGBTQ plus community, when I hear the rights that you know, that women are still crying for to have control over their own bodies. I know that, you know, as a person with a disability, I have had to have some conversations that make me open and want to throw myself into those fights in ways that I think other people don't necessarily always have. Mm-hmm. You know. Mm-hmm. Last question. So this is, I don't know where we're gonna go with this, but we put this in. If you could build a school that completely empowered all Black students with dyslexia and ADHD, what would every educator and staff member in that school be able to do, have, or understand?
I think understanding the child and what they can do because if you understand that and you have the training of the strategies of phonemic awareness and the breakdowns of teaching them how to say the beginning foundations that they need for reading and continue that through their education, and to just connect with the student and that family to really get to know them, put all that together, I think that would be a good structure for a school setting.
Awesome.
I just want to add on to what Carmen said. I would go a little bit further, because being a public school educator, a big piece of working with our children in our communities is, my biggest beef is the testing. The testing keeps a lot of our kids back on purpose. Let's be clear about that. It is on purpose. It's so funny because all year when I get observed, I know a lot of us can relate to this as a special educator. I am, you know, what did you modify? Let me see your modifications. You know, when it comes to state testing, I am clearly told I cannot modify anything. I cannot talk to my students. I have students who cannot read, who are clearly dyslexic. I'm not an expert on it, but I know what it looks like. Mm-hmm. And when I ask for text-to-speech, which is a great supportive tool, they're telling me that that child has to be practically hearing impaired. I mean, to, mm-hmm. you know, a level of disability that's the highest for them to get text-to-speech. I remember the first year I was teaching in Patterson, I had a student who clearly could not read. He was in fourth grade. I loved him. Could not read. He was being pushed through. Yeah. Easily pushed through.
Yeah.
Got diagnosed late. I think he was just diagnosed the year before I got him. So that means in third grade, you're being diagnosed as having a disability, which is insane to me. And when I begged, I wrote, you know, my board of education, I wrote downtown, I was still told no. So I had to watch, and they, you know, they're very strict. You know, you cannot talk to the student. You can only read directions. You can't do anything. So I watched this child struggle, brought tears to my eyes, struggle, because he's sitting there looking at the screen and just pressing. He was done in what, 6 minutes?
I know that pain personally.
Yes.
Because like having a teacher not being able to like help you and explain what to do, it's a whole like heartbreak, because like you're sitting there thinking like to yourself, oh, I don't got this. I can't do it. Like this, I'm not smart enough to do this. I won't be able to do this or pass my next classes or graduate or go to college or get a job or do anything. I completely do understand where you're coming from. And that was like in my district, that was how it was a little bit in the early years. So I find that very like they need to change it or something.
I would love to see, my dream would be that instead of state testing, districts would create tests based on the community that they're serving and their experiences. I remember there was a district assessment we had to give our students, and there's a story about a geyser. Okay, does anybody know what a geyser is? I had to look it up. And, you know, it's this family, they're traveling, and they're going to see this amazing geyser, and everybody's there. And I remember reading it and saying, this has nothing to do with the background of the students that I serve.
Yeah.
And if you're going to be successful about the learning of our Black and brown children and really giving them the opportunity to reflect on their own experiences and make that connection, which is part of growth, which is part of life, we have to start looking at their experiences. We have to start looking at their background. Mm-hmm. I hated that story. I hated it. And I complained downtown to our board. And that story probably still coming out. I'm sure it is. It's probably still coming out. And every other educator of color that I spoke to agreed with me. That was there before I even got there to that district. And it's interesting because the one thing I do love about having my own classroom, you know, my own space, is that I create my own curriculum. I do. I remember we were doing social studies and we were talking about, I can't remember his name right now, he created the oil for the trains.
Elijah McCoy.
Elijah, there you go. And part of his story was that his family came up through the Underground Railroad. Mm-hmm. I took that and ran with it. And my kids had such an amazing experience because we did the story, but I also went further with it because Patterson was a site of the Underground Railroad. It was a stop.
Yes.
And we talked about how, guess what's there right now? Wendy's restaurant. And we researched and we found out that there was a coffee house that used to sit there, and how
when the enslaved came up and went into Garrett Mountain, they could look down and see the candles and the light, and they knew how to come down into Patterson. They did not know that that was their background. And when I tell you, they went home and spoke to their parents. I'm sorry about emotional. They went home and told their parents, and their parents had texted, Ms. Brown, I didn't know this. And I said, yeah, I've been living in Patterson for years, and I didn't know this. Mm-hmm. But the learning that took place, and these are kids that are labeled mm-hmm. with IEPs mm-hmm. and can't do anything and got diagnosed late.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But because of that experience, because I took it, this is your history. And you have to take that and create that and mold it for them. And that's when they start enjoying coming to school. You understand what I'm saying? And then they see, oh, I do have a future. This is the, oh, wait a minute. You see the growth. You see the learning. Regardless of, stop looking at what they can't do. Let's talk about what you can do. To me, that's powerful. And that's what needs to happen in our districts. It has to happen. It's not. It's not. And you know, when you talk about what every educator and staff member needs to do, find out about your kids. Yeah, definitely. Take the time out. You know, it doesn't take that long. And I think I hate to say it, and I'm going to say it, and a lot of educators are going to be mad. Some of us are just coming in there for a paycheck. I see it. Definitely. I have a lot of colleagues who I know you're just coming in there for a paycheck. I have colleagues who don't live in my district. They're traveling in. Traveling in. So at the end of the day, they're like 3:00. I'm going home. I'm going to go to my nice district where the taxes are paying for incredible service. I don't have, you know, garbage line streets. I don't have to hear the loud music. I'm only here from 8 to 3. That's not okay. You can live outside the district, but know who you're teaching. Know the community. Be invested. And if not, then I highly suggest you get another job. And I'm not afraid to say that. Get another job. This is not for you. This is not for everybody. It's not. So that's what I would like to see happen.
Frank, I'll let you close it out, and then we'll go to the audience. But I'm having an interesting moment as you're telling this story. And I don't, what happened in my brain, I'm just going to share what happened in this dyslexic brain as you were telling this story. So you, at that moment, could not recall the name Elijah McCoy. You said E, some name that started with an E, and oil, right? Okay, so like there's a great book, The Dyslexic Advantage. And one of the things they talk about is dyslexic's abilities to be able to be, like, come with answers and solutions with very small details. Right. So the only reason I knew to say the name Elijah McCoy, right? Some of it is just like a little bit of fragments, and then I could jump to Elijah McCoy, is because I had a black science teacher when I was in middle school. And I can remember very clearly, and it must have been for Black History Month, he made every one of us memorize. We had these cards, and he was like, you are all gonna leave my class and know at least one black inventor, black scientist. And my inventor, all the way back in middle school, I don't know if I've said the name Elijah McCoy since then. Right?
Right, yes.
Right?
Yes.
That representation, that, yes. You know, that power. And I don't know, maybe that's off topic, but it was just something that's just happened in my head.
So I would say I'm going to borrow something from the physical disability world and kind of move it over to the learning disability, developmental disability world, and that is universal design. Yes. So when you start to think about how we put these structures together, we, for years, built structures and then rebuilt them to accommodate people that needed those kind of accommodations. If we start reverse engineering this process, who are we looking to educate? The moment you don't say everybody, we're already behind the eight ball.
Yes.
We're already behind the eight ball. Yes. And that needs to start with how we construct schools, both physically and intellectually. The other thing is, and I think this is true often for any number of industries, disproportionately true in education. When you are a great educator, and let's not get it twisted, this is a great educator. Right, right. Let's not get it twisted. You have the opportunity to change somebody's life in ways that you could not possibly foresee. I was fortunate enough when I got to high school to have a teacher who, to this day, is probably the third person on my call list when anything happens. Something positive happens, something negative happens, and the reason she holds such esteem in my life is because when I walked into her class, she said, I have read everything about you. She goes, I know you called in a bomb scare. I know you tried to slug a teacher. Listen, I know it all.
Frank was that kid, okay.
I'm just telling them, this is just truth. She said, I also know what your IQ is. And she said, the next time you're not at a 95 and above, I will call your parents. I said, well, that ain't never gonna happen because it ain't never happened. First semester, I am absolutely clear. Like we talked about your ability to be a great bowler. I might still be an unbelievably shooter. The knees are gone, the rest of the body is gone. Put me on the foul line, I will knock it down all night long. She said, that's right, I will call your parents. I got a 94. She was on the phone to my parents, said, if I were you, I wouldn't let him play basketball ever again. Whoa. Don't think that didn't change how I approached her, her class, and everything she touched for the rest of my life. And I think part of what we need to design is a way for teachers, administrators, and schools to create spaces where students who learn differently feel like they're not othered,
yes,
but are what they are. Yes. Just folks who learn differently. Yes. Like, mm-hmm. Yes. We just learn differently. So absolutely. Why not make the kind of accommodations that works for everybody?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I want to share one thing. Just hearing everybody speak about this, and I'm always reflecting on my experience as a mom, as an advocate in this space, and I'm watching my daughter. So she got the 3 D's. Dyslexia, dyscalculia, and dysgraphia. We just got the 3 D's, right? What's this, 2023? 2023, she's a published author. Her 100 word or less story about a villain was selected to be in an anthology. Nice. The book just came in March, and I asked her to read her section to me, and she stumbled. I said, do you remember writing it? She was like, kind of. Yeah, it was so long ago, mommy. He did submit it? But I just want to say, like, speech to text, her teacher told me that she gives him eye contact and she goes like that. She points to the door. She goes outside of the classroom. She uses her device to speech text her notes. Her literacy comp teacher told me last year, Logan takes excellent notes. Well, I know she won't write and I know she struggles with spelling. And the teacher brought up the PowerPoint. I said, she created that? She's like, yeah, Logan did that. And she's like, oh, yes, mommy, I'm an excellent note taker. I was like, wow. But given the tools, this is a young lady who still was, when I told her to read her part in the book to me, she was looking. I was like, come on, you wrote it. But then I also had to tell her about someone we had on the podcast, Dr. Tracy Johnson, who is a professor who's dyslexic, who said that she creates PowerPoints and she'll start reading the slides and she'll know by the class's response that she's not reading what's on there. And she said she'll kind of flip it and go on to something else, you know? She's the professor, right? So when we give them the tools that they need, yes, they can be successful, yes, right? Like they really can do their potential. We can maximize their potential just given the tools.
Absolutely. All right, we're going to pass the mic around. If there are any questions, it's our audience's opportunity. We're recording this. It will be released jointly with Winifred's organization through the Black and Dyslexic podcast, but also NJEA is going to have the right, and they're going to put it out through their newsletter where everyone will be able to listen to it. Yeah. Okay.
Hi, my name is Sharon, and I'm an educator in West Orange High School. I am floored just hearing the perspectives from all the different avenues. The student, thank you. Mm-hmm. Yes. From a person that's working as the social worker, the LD, yeah, thank you. A parent, you are hands down teacher hero. And really, just hearing the mom with her story and her advocacy. One of my questions is this. I have students, and the reason why I took this is I have students as a high school teacher that have only recently been diagnosed or not diagnosed. And I also know adults that were diagnosed very late.
Yeah.
So they didn't have the joy of experiencing this that you have. I'm so impressed. What type of resources are available for someone that is much older, that is aging out of the system or has already left school? What type of things are available for them?
I'll take that one because that is a something that is near and dear to my heart. Like watching my daughter's father, I often describe him as such lost potential because he is so smart. He can look up at the sky and name stuff up there. Like he's just very great work ethic, just very neurodivergent, but I didn't notice initially. And I worked a lot in HR. We had a couple of years back, you guys may have heard about the riot unrest that we had in Baltimore when they murdered a young man, Freddie Gray. Yes. And at the time, I later worked for an organization that said, we're gonna hire from the most distressed neighborhoods, zip codes in Baltimore into entry-level positions, the largest private employer. So I was, a part of my job was going out and build relationships with community-based organizations who are working with this distressed population. And to Shay's comment about testing and assessment, as adults, it doesn't go away because some jobs require you to take an assessment. Mm-hmm. And what happened to me was one of my students, I got four girls. I taught in 2014 to 2016. I still got four girls. One of my girls texted me, Miss Winston, I'm gonna get a job at this employer. I knew she had a learning difference. I knew she wouldn't ask for accommodations. I knew she wasn't going to be successful, and she wasn't. So I took it to leadership because these undiagnosed children are now adults who are still struggling. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So one of our friends and colleagues in the space, Dr. Sean Anthony Robinson, he has an 8-week word analysis course. It was taught at a community college. And so we partnered with him with my nonprofit for adults to take that class. I think I was sharing earlier before we started, my daughter walked in and her dad had the book and she looked at it and said, well, daddy, that's what I'm learning. And then they both started going, pup, 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 pup. Well, I don't know. Like she was saying what sounds they made, I don't know. But they were doing that together. And her dad was taking this class online with middle school and high school students. And he said he saw himself in one of those kids. He said he was quiet. He wouldn't speak up. He would not volunteer to read. And if any of you guys heard of Dr. Dyslexia Dude, that's who Sean Anthony Robinson is. And he was dyslexic, graduated high school, not being able to read. He was pushing them and like, you can do this because I'm doing this. So we partner with Sean to offer that class to adults. And my older brother, who we never knew, now I know, severely dyslexic. It was like a running joke in the family. He's still in pre-GED. Like we did not know. And what he said was the adult literacy places are giving them packets or trying to teach them to pass the GED test, but are not teaching them how to read, right? So we've been trying to partner with them to get the evaluation. So we have access to two, we have a screener, and we're trying to build a partnership with another organization to do the comprehensive evaluation by a licensed clinician that's affordable, right? To get them identified so we know where they're struggling at, but then to come in and offer a course like Sean's course, because it's unrealistic that an adult with adult responsibilities who are adulting are going to do 5 times a week, hour, 2 hours of tutoring, but to give them strategies and skills so that they can immediately incorporate what they're learning on how to understand words and how to break them apart. Mm-hmm. So we're doing that to help adults. And we also want to go into the workplace and help adults, because most will struggle with executive function, right? Uh-huh. And so we try to partner with businesses. It may sound redundant or like, oh, they should know this, but all of these undiagnosed folks who did not get diagnosed, then you add the ones who were diagnosed but did not get interventions, they're still going to work.
Yeah,
they're your rock stars who are late because they're ADHD. Uh-huh. She's struggling to get to school now. She's gonna struggle at work. They're the ones who are messing up their calendar. That is so me. I double book, triple book, forget to put it on there. So they're in the workplace still struggling with these things. So we try to go in and help businesses and educate businesses around neurodiversity, focusing on dyslexia, ADHD, and executive function. So we've been really trying to tackle adults because oftentimes parents like myself find out right when their child is diagnosed. So getting the screener or assessment, because they too still need to know what it is, what's going on, but then finding resources that work for adults. And for us, it has been Sean's class, because these are adults, I think it's an 8-week class, and these are adults who really just don't have the time or capacity to do intensive tutoring. And then we do have some adults who want that one-on-one time with a professional who can help them.
And I've had this experience where I've done presentations, and you'll get someone who'll come up to you, to come up to me and say, "Hey, I'm 42 years old," and we'll have tears in their eyes. "I was diagnosed, a year ago or something." And what I have consistently seen is a mix of emotions. A "Thank God I'm not stupid. I now have a name for why it is I've struggled for so long." But then also, and I think Winifred maybe mentioned this earlier in our conversation, that there's this regret that I have dumbed my life down, right? There are these other things I could have done if I had just known and gotten those supports. And one of the things that I think is critical for adults and probably for all of us is that we do proactively seeking out that mental health support. Yeah. You can figure out the tricks to helping you with spelling and to, and even the calendar piece. There are all these different things that we can gamify it and come up with solutions. What will make many of us not even seek help is the mental health aspect of it. And so that's one of the first places I would start. It's a lot about accepting who we are. And again, it's I'm so grateful for everyone lending their not only their expertise, but their narratives to this conversations, because we hope that there are adults that are going to hear this and hear themselves and then, want to take the next step afterwards.
And I'll just add, in all the, I started this journey in 2017 with my daughter, and I was sharing with the panel, I was diagnosed with ADHD, but didn't hear it. In 2009, I was diagnosed. I didn't hear it. My doctor diagnosed me, prescribed medicine. I took the medicine, I think it was Adderall, and I took it for a brief time because then I got pregnant with my daughter. And I told her, I thought he was just giving me the hookup. She said, "What's the hookup?" I said, "Well, whatever doctors and lawyers take to get through school." I did not hear it. And it wasn't until my daughter was diagnosed, I told my primary, "Oh, her dad's dyslexic, and they're trying to say she's ADHD too, because we're Black and it's a medical code, and insurance won't pay for the evaluation, right? Because they say it's not medically necessary." I said, "Oh, so they're trying to tag ADHD onto it." And my doctor was like, "What? You're ADHD." I was like, "What?" She was like, "She gets it from you. I diagnosed you in 2009. You don't remember?" I still didn't hear it. I still didn't receive it, right? And it wasn't until 2020, and I remember prior to the pandemic, 2019, someone asked me to be on their podcast to talk about ADHD. And I was thinking, okay, I'll do it. But there was a little voice back here saying, "No, you're not." I still did not accept it. I still did not embrace it as a part of my identity. Not until 2020. Now, I do the podcast, I'm reading, I'm learning about ADHD and what it looks like for my daughter. But I really had to self-reflect and say, what does it look like for me? Right? And I was telling LaDerek last night, I said, it's been emotional. Because I am the Winifred that I've known all my life. I struggled in school. I was smart and always in advanced classes, but I always felt like I was overworking because of my working memory. Right? You can't give me a test on chapters 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 at the end of the year. I can't. You give me, and I made A on the first chapter, A on the second chapter. But then the teacher's looking at me like, "Are you cheating?" Right? Do you really belong in my class? Right? So there was this whole emotional toil on me because I start looking at my professional career. I've never held a job for 5 years. Never. Why? Because once the thrill is gone, my ADHD said, "You gotta find something else." Right? So when he says that mental health is so important, because I'm like, now it's like this new Winifred. Mm. Now I know when I am exacerbating my ADHD and I have to pause. But it is so hard for me to take that pause because for 40 plus years, I was like this. And I got accustomed to it. My family got accustomed to it. So that mental health, when I interview, now I mark on every application, "Are you someone who identifies with a disability?" Right. I mark it. Yeah. Boom. Never even thought I would have to do that. Mm-hmm. Right? So even me and all the advocacy that I do with all the professionals that I have access to, mentally, I'm ADHD. Mm-hmm. And I can tell sometimes when it causes me to lose opportunities because everyone can't accept my energy. Can you imagine doing a job interview and you're passionate about the position? Oh my God. I am just amped, right? Like, so it is still a struggle for me, and I'm in this space. And I have a psychologist who says, well, Winifred, anytime you want to talk, and I'm in my feelings, not today. Like, I don't want to do it today. You know what I mean? So it's okay for any of the adults who are listening to feel all of your emotions about it. Yeah. Right? And I feel like it is so much harder when you find out as an adult.
Later on in life.
It is so hard. Like, my daughter, I tell her all the time, you are so lucky. Like, you are so lucky because a part of me is now this, like, new Winifred. I don't want a new Winifred. Mm-hmm. Right? I just got comfortable with who I've always been. But now, you know, some days I'm excited that I can say, oh, I'm ADHD and this is why. And in other days, in all honesty, I'm frustrated that I can't go to sleep at night, that my brain won't shut off. I just thought I had insomnia, but there is a deficiency in the melatonin, but I didn't know that. You know, so some days I'm frustrated because if I don't get enough sleep, then I don't function well. Like, a lack of sleep is so bad for somebody who has ADHD, but then it's hard for you to go to sleep. Yeah. So it's okay because the mental health is definitely, it's there.
We're running short on time. I'd love to get at least two more questions. Yes. Okay. Go
ahead. Not so much a question, but I just wanted to say I am an ESP that I've been in the Lakewood School District for going on 17 years. And I went back to school to get my master's to be a behaviorist. So I'm now getting my hours to be a behaviorist. And I work with children on the spectrum. And where I work is dominantly brown and black children. And that's the only time I get to mold those minds of those children that are on the spectrum is in my district. I also do home therapy. And everyone that I have is Caucasian. And I know there are families out there, but their insurance won't pay for it because they don't have the right insurance. Right. So when you were speaking, I'm gonna cry all the time. Every time I come and see you, I'm gonna cry. But my spirit just feel it, and it's hard because I know, and I just want to go into these homes and be like, I can help you. I'm in Walmart and I see a kid and I'm like, don't yell at him. He's on the spectrum. And I just gravitate and I want to help. There's just so many families out there that need it. I don't know what more I can do. Any suggestions, let me know.
You know what, we gonna be quiet. What do y'all think?
Everything you say in his home, what's hurting me is I just feel like there needs to be more outreach. When you talk about the whole mental health aspect, especially not for me, I remember I get therapy. I'm a proud person to say I've been in therapy since I was 21 years old. I knew I needed help. I went into deep depression and said I had to get help. My mother, because of her culture, that stigma, Jamaicans, it's not a thing. Therapy is not a thing. My mother, I remember I brought her into one of my therapy sessions and she told the therapist, I told Shay, all she needs to do is go shopping. And my therapist just looked because she thought I was joking when I told her that. I said, Mama's going to tell you to go shopping. And when I brought her in, you know, the therapist just wide-eyed and was like, oh my gosh. The biggest thing is, I don't know how, I wish I had the answer, but there has to be some type of outreach. Our families, even before we hit our babies, we have families, parents, mothers, fathers, aunts, uncles, grandmothers, who are not even aware of what mental health means. I have students, when we talk about ADHD, I have students who, you know, some behavioral challenges, fine, we're in class, and can't settle, and I have small groups. And, you know, I'll pull them out, him or her, and speak to them. And you know what they tell me? Well, my mama told me I have ADHD, so that's why I can't get it done. You know, and I'm just like, okay, that's not true. And I will call your mother later, and we're going to have a conversation. But you're going to sit down, and we're going to talk this out, and we're going to get this lesson done. I think there has to be, the educational piece is big in terms of educating our communities and going in and saying, this is what it is. This is what it looks like. There's nothing wrong. And me even saying to some of my parents, I get therapy. I'm just letting you know on a personal level, I get therapy and it's okay. I'm a single mom like you. I have two kids. The struggle is there. There's nothing wrong with it. but also finding the resources. Because when you talk about that insurance piece, that's a huge piece. You know, like I said earlier, when I reach out to a lot of my families, and especially if I see the younger siblings, and I'll say, I need you to call this number for early intervention. You know, the state, you got that, state covers it. But when that, you know, they hit that 3-year-old mark, that's an issue, you know, and they don't understand what insurance does. And insurance is created in a way for our communities not to strive. You know, if you don't work and you don't have that good job and that good insurance, we're not going to pay for it. And then they'll say, oh, we'll pay for it, but there's a copay. Who has a copay? Who has a copay? I'm serious. You know, it's unfair. It's a system that is not created for us, nor by us. And I think that's where we have to start, but there has to be more advocacy. And the thing is, I do believe that there are resources out there, but they're not so open to us and accessible by us. I think that's a big piece of it. But what you're doing, when you said, what can I do? You're doing it. Yeah. I don't know if you realize
having that conversation in Walmart.
Yeah, I think you're doing it. I think a lot of times we think it's just us. And I know I get frustrated, but I have a lot of my colleagues who say, but Shay, you're doing it. What are you talking about? You are making a change. You know, it might not be on that grand scale that you're talking about, but you're making a change. And you have to remember that. You have to remember that. Keep that as your forefront. And what happens is when people see you, oh, it's going to start spreading. Because I know it's spreading. So just keep that in mind and don't stop.
The only thing I would add to that is, particularly with folks who have learning disabilities, this is going to probably be a little uncomfortable, but if you're an African American of a particular skin complexion, there's this thing called passing. And oftentimes, folks with learning disabilities pass. They're unwilling to identify because, for all the same reasons that historically African Americans passed, there are other benefits that you just get. And if you're unwilling to identify, oftentimes there's the disconnection from all the things that are really vital and relevant: getting support, understanding, growing your knowledge of what your particular disability is and how there's a community of support. But if you don't identify, if you're unwilling to say, hey, this is me, then that support system doesn't exist.
So I know we're at time. Can we do one more question and then we'll just wrap up?
I just wanted to say, I wanted to thank you all. I personally was diagnosed late with dyslexia. And
welcome to the club.
Yeah, I didn't know we had a big club.
You're a good tribe. You're a good tribe now.
And ADHD, so all I good. Love this.
Right.
And you guys hit home so many times. You made me cry. And I kind of always knew, you know? I don't know if you felt the same way. You kind of always kind of knew, but you can't tell.
Well, yeah, I do think I'm special.
Yeah, right. You guys are very special. So I just wanted to say thank you because, like, I can really relate a lot to what you guys were saying. And, you know, my parents were immigrants, so they didn't know English. So I had to learn basically on my own. And I was in a Caucasian, like, dominant, you know, school. Yeah. And it was really hard because I was laughed at by teachers. Yes. Wow. And you know, the famous, like, spelling bee line. Where
traumatic. First round exit.
I was the first one out with Wednesday.
Why is Wednesday so hard to spell?
Why is
Wednesday
so hard? I can't spell dyslexia for the life of me. Exactly. So I just wanted to be, you know, I wanted to, you know, thank you guys so much. And I actually, you know, was told by teachers I was stupid. And so it hurt so much, but I was so determined and I became an educator and an interpreter. Yes. So I was like, you think I don't know English? Well, let me interpret it for you. Right. So So I'm really grateful to have people like you. And I was so excited to you know, that you guys were here because, you know, it's hard and you feel alone. You really do. And I have so many ideas, but the whole, you know, mental aspect where the limited beliefs that, you know, are inflicted because of all these people, even my parents that were very toxic, would inflict on me. And and it was just so hard to believe in yourself. Yeah. And now I have so many ideas, and seeing you guys is just,
it inspired me. I'm just like jumping like her and just so excited. But I would like to know how do you guys get those ideas, you know, from paper into actions? Because I'm in that stage where I'm just like, I got this, you know, but I don't know what to do with it.
So something came to mind, but when you say those ideas, what are some of those ideas that you mean?
So I would like to write books, like children's books.
Okay.
And also, like, I have this idea for a certain book. And it's funny because it's going to be about dyslexia, but not the educational side, but the experience side. Mm-hmm. For those, you know.
Yes.
And I'm just really excited about it. And with AI now, writing books is so much easier.
Don't say it.
So I started it, but I don't have, you know, I've even found an editor, and she's actually Black. She's African American, and she's beautiful. She's super nice. I told her she's gonna be on the front cover because this book is gonna be readable because of her. But I have that. I also have like ideas for children, like games that I want to come up with, especially also because I interpret for deaf. So there's so many that are deaf and hard of hearing who have dyslexia. You have no idea. That's a whole other world too. And you know, I also teach in Newark. So that's you with dealing with charter schools, and they do not get the help that they need. And so coming up with like different activities, strategies, helping teachers understand that they, if they're going to teach something, they have to teach it in multiple different ways.
Okay.
So
the audience listening can't see this, but Winifred is at the edge of her seat.
Yeah.
ready to respond. So go for it.
So I even already took my card out. I was like, okay, I'm going to connect with her later. So how we come up with these ideas, just like how you came up with all those ideas, because you're neurodivergent, because we are the bomb, right? Mm-hmm. Like we're really special. I wasn't even going to show this because I got this for you, Desi. Like, this, I'm going to give you this copy. God. But this is a dyslexia word search puzzle book that me and my daughter did, right?
Wow.
Created. So here's the thing. With my ADHD, I had an idea, and I stayed up for 3 days. Like, the sun was coming up, and I was still on the computer because I was like, oh, yeah, puzzle book. It'll be fun. It'll be educational. So it's 50 puzzles. Each puzzle has 10 words. So you've got components of an IEP, and then the 10 words are the components of an IEP. Life with undiagnosed dyslexia, 10 words, emotional, low self-esteem, fearful, right? We've got states with dyslexia legislation. I've got dyslexia private schools, charter schools, movies that have a dyslexic character. Oh, heroes advocating for change, right? So LaDerek is one of those heroes.
I'm going to have to find LaDerek.
But,
that is stupid.
So he's featured. But I wanted a fun way to educate parents, caregivers, children to have these conversations. So the premise was, we're going to give you the words, and now you do the research, right? One of my favorite ones is methodologies and approaches to teach reading. As educators, we know like a methodology and approach, but then over here we have dyslexia intervention programs. Wow. We know that that's a difference. So now I'm giving you 10 words that fall under methodologies and approaches. 10 words over here, that's program. Where are they gonna hear that in that IEP meeting?
Uh-huh.
Now you know to ask that right question. What intervention, what methodology as a parent, right? What approach are you using?
Yes.
So I got you.
All right, so
like we're gonna connect.
What's the name of the book?
Oh, I'm sorry.
And where can people find it?
Oh, that's right.
See, this is the role that I play.
Yeah, where are we going to find this book?
Go ahead.
So you can find it on Amazon.
I love it.
It's the Dyslexia Word Search Puzzle, Winifred A. Winston, Logan West. It's on Amazon, and right now it's only $5.49.
I love it.
And you get an autographed copy.
Yeah. As soon as you were talking, because I was like, I'm gonna give her the, and I only had one like book with me that's clean. Like this is like my copy. But when you talked about you and your sister, I was like, they're gonna have conversations.
Yeah, I was thinking about doing that with her.
Oh yeah, so we're going to connect because you can definitely get all of this out. Like I said, my daughter is in an anthology. I've been in 4 books, and I'm currently working on writing a book about overcoming dyslexia, the hidden epidemic in the Black community. Mm.
Wow.
So
we got to close.
Yeah.
Oh, we got to close.
Yes.
I just want to say, definitely, I wish you so much luck with that book, because like, if I had a book when I was younger that like that explains and shows what dyslexia is, I feel like that would have helped me. I wish you the best of luck on your way to do this book and games and
So I want to close out by saying thank you to the NJEA for inviting us to have this session. I want to thank everybody who's in the room with us for being like an awesome audience. Like the energy has been amazing. Thank you for your comments. Thank you for being here. And then thank you, Winifred, for coming up. Like this is another idea. Sister drove up from Maryland last night, and it was 8:30. We was in the lobby prepping. I was like, I'm falling asleep. She's ready to go. But if we could all give a real strong round of applause and just thank our panel.
Yeah. Well, there you have it. We wrapped up our session at the NJEA Transform Conference in Somerset, New Jersey. Another episode of the Black and Dyslexic Podcast. Stay tuned. We have some superb guests coming up for season two, so you don't want to miss it as we still help you navigate and understand how to win over dyslexia with our next guest.
Yeah, and just in case there's anyone out there listening who enjoyed this session, we'd love to do this again. This is the one for, what is this? It's the second conference we were able to bring the podcast to. So if there's anyone that's having a conference or any kind of event that would love to, you know, have us come out, we would love to be able to explore the issues around being Black, being dyslexic, mental health issues, ADHD, and other communities. So please reach out to us. Winifred, what's the best way for people to reach out?
If you're interested in having us come to your city for a live session of the Black and Dyslexic Podcast, hit me up directly, wwinston@soallcanread.org. That's my direct email address. That's wwinston@soallcanread.org.
All right. And we'll see y'all in the next episode.
Tune in next week, where we'll continue to bring you lived experiences and more unfiltered conversations with experts in the field around all things Black and dyslexic. Make sure you subscribe and follow the Black and Dyslexic podcast, where we educate, empower, and equip Black and underrepresented minorities. The Black and Dyslexic Podcast is partially funded by Morgan Cares and the Center for Urban Health Disparities Research and Innovation, awarded by the National Institute of Minority Health and Health Disparities. The Black and Dyslexic Podcast is sponsored by Dyslexia Advocation Incorporated, a 501c3 charitable organization located in Baltimore City, Maryland, whose mission is to equip parents of children with dyslexia and other language-based learning disabilities with the necessary tools to help their children become successful readers. You can find them on the web at www.soallcanread.org.